Ronaldo's got that twist now and pivot in the air.
Yeah.
I look at him doing that and I'm thinking, ooh, be careful. Yeah. That's like cruciate. That's potential cruciate in the making.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
Football on Off the Ball.
So OTB Sports is back for another series of in-depth chats with some of the biggest names in Premier League and Irish football history. With behind-the-scenes access, we're talking some of the legendary names from the biggest clubs and meeting the crucial people behind the scenes who make a Premier League club what it is. It's all in association with Cadbury FC, global partner of Manchester United. Check out cadburyfc.com for updates on promotions and giveaways. Well, when we talk about getting access all areas, this man most certainly had that triple A pass. For 20 years, he had a front row seat for Manchester United's most glorious era. A trusted confidant for United players and in particular for Alex Ferguson, I'm delighted to be joined by the former Manchester United kit man, Albert Morgan. How are you keeping, Albert?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I'd say you've seen some things during your time.
Just a little bit.
I presume, though, trust is the number one attribute that's needed for a kit man.
Well, that's the thing that I say to people, that's the thing that I'm most proud of. I know that I've got Sir Alex's trust, and I know I've got the trust of a lot of people at the club, and I'm very, very proud of that.
Did you ever, during all your time, your 20 years with Alex Ferguson, did you ever slip up on the trust side of things? A conversation that happened with a player or with the manager that you're talking to someone and you just mentioned it and next thing it gets back and you're getting an angry phone call, say, what'd you say that for?
No.
Never?
No, never. Because it was one of the most difficult parts of the job because I felt as though I was sat on top of the fence. I mean, I heard things that the boys said, the players, and I heard things that the staff said and the manager said, and he told me things that were very, very confidential, and you know, and it was a, sometimes I called it, it felt as though you were juggling soot. it was very, 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 very difficult sometimes.
Yeah, it's a very privileged position to be in.
Yeah, but I'm proud of, like I say, I'm very, very proud of that, of the trust.
How do you become the Manchester United kit man?
Well, the original kit man, a lovely man called Norman Davis, I used to work with him when I was 15. I was his apprentice, and then Norman left and went to United driving a taxi and whatever. And then the kit man's role was developed. And then Norman took that role on, made it what it was then. And then after he did it for 26 years, and that was at the time when you had to retire at 65. So I'd always said to Norman jokingly, if ever you get fed up with this, give me a ring. Right. And he rang me one day and I was gobsmacked. And then things happened and I ended up having the job.
So while you might have had a bit of an eye on the job and hoping that one day you might get the opportunity, like, can you prepare for that role? Have you spent the previous years with underage teams or with local clubs?
I did a 3-year apprenticeship with Norman. I mean, Norman, you know, taught me everything that I know and what I did, and I stuck to it. You know, it was like Norman's way, and it never let me down, and I stuck to it right until the end. And I did 3 years with the under 18s when the Beckhams and the Nevilles and all the class of 92 were coming through. They led me a merry dance.
Oh yeah.
When I first joined the club, and then I did the reserves, and then in 1996, after the European Championships, I took over from Norman because he retired. And, well, the rest is history, as they say.
And were you a United fan?
Always. I've been going to United I can honestly say I've been going to United since I was six.
Okay.
And I'm turned 70 now, so I've been going a long time.
So you were there in the days of John Giles?
Yes. Yeah.
That must be an incredible experience then, to go from being at Old Trafford week in, week out for 30, 35 years, always wondering, I guess, like any fan, what it's really like inside the dressing room, to suddenly find yourself front and centre.
Oh yeah, very. It was very, very, daunting.
Obviously, when you're in the stands as a supporter, you would have gone there on a Saturday and you probably would have been able to let out a lot of emotion for the good times and the bad times. And when things are going well, you can hug everyone around you. You can get as excited as you want. When things aren't going as well, you can shout and roar like everybody else. I assume you got to park that once you're in the dugout.
Oh, yes. You have your emotions very, 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 very much so. But you've got to, there is a vast, vast difference between being a supporter and somebody as close as I was to it all, really.
Do you have to, when it comes to celebrations, do you follow the manager's lead? If the manager is jumping around the place, or Alex Ferguson, as he would have at Old Trafford, would run down the steps in celebration when it was a goal that really meant something, is that sort of the okay for the backroom staff to really lose it?
Well, yeah, of course it is. That's encouraged. That's all. A part of it, that's a good thing. I mean, you know, you work out towards that, you know, whether the game's done on a Wednesday night or a Saturday or a Sunday, and you work towards that. And if you've just got to show your feelings. You can't, it's like, you know, when we had a few disappointments, you were absolutely gutted.
I'd imagine for that role, you need a little bit of OCD. You need to be absolutely methodical, obsessed with the minor details. I saw an interview with Alex Ferguson where he was talking about you, and he was joking, but he said every mistake that's made at the club is Albert's problem. It's his fault. And there is a bit of that when you're the kit man. There's so much responsibility to make sure that the show is kept on the road, that almost the players need to even not know you're there when it comes to match day, because everything is so well prepared. That brings a lot of pressure in that sort of role.
Definitely. I mean, my idea of the job was, you know, if the boys go out there with a clear, you know, nothing on the mind except the game, you know, they don't have to worry about if the right boot is rubbing the heel or the socks a bit tight or this or that or the other. You've got to, you know, you want them going out there with a clear mind so that they can perform to the highest level. And that was what the aim was. And we had a motto in the laundry, that was Norman's motto, and the motto was cover your ass, and that's how we worked. It had to be like that. You had to have every channel covered. We made a few mistakes. You held your hand up because everybody made mistakes, but there were few and far between. It was just a, you know, and we had good people around us as well. There was, you know, the medical department are very, very good. Everybody, it's a great, well-run organisation.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a big team there behind the scenes that we never really get to see as a club besides Manchester United. Did you notice over the 15, 20 years a change in the demands of players and what they wanted and how they wanted to prepare for a game? As you talk about, you know, making sure the boot is right, the socks aren't too tight. I'm sure there were plenty of prima donnas through the years. Did that grow as they became a little bit more pampered?
You didn't notice that because they all had their own little things that they liked and what they didn't like, and you know, you'd get a rapport with the players and the boys. And you know, it was all like banter, because they knew that, you know, you tried your best. And oh, there wasn't many what I call prima donnas anyway, because you know, the manager could see that and he used to nail it, as simple as that. I mean, I think nowadays it's changed.
who, when you think back to coming into that dressing room, who were the big characters? Who were the ones you would have spent a bit of time with?
Well, you're looking at your Schmeichels and your Cantonas and your Steve Bruce's and your Brian Robson's, and then you went on to your Roy Keane's, and you know, you just went through characters. Rio came in, Vida came in, Edwin van der Sar came in. Oh, we've been blessed at Manchester United with some of the players that we've had at our club. Blessed.
And would you have been able to tell when a player came in, big reputation, big transfer fee or not, would you be able to tell quite quickly whether they were going to be a success?
Yeah. I used to, might be a bit hard, but I could suss them out within 6 or 7 weeks.
Right. And what were you sussing out?
Well, the temperaments, you know, how they played, could they handle it, and different things like that, the mannerisms, the way they acted. Yeah, that's what you could suss out. Still can.
Would you have had many of them in the dressing room who were superstitious?
They're all little quirks. I mean, people ask me this question many, many times. Cantona was the one. Cantona used to like the same pair of socks and the same shorts. You know, whether 1 week we'd play in a black short or a white sock or whatever. And the laundry ladies used to mark the shorts or the socks up top like.
Right, so he wanted the exact same pair of shorts and socks for every single match.
Depending on whether it was obviously played in black and white or what colour we played in. Mm. And then he also wanted a salt pot. Like, he used to get hold of the salt pot, hold of the sock, put his arm in the sock, open it out, stretch it and pull it, and then he'd shake the salt pot in the socks. What that did, I don't know, but to myself, I christened him Salt and Vinegar Feet.
I was going to say maybe it helped them smell a bit nicer, but sure, if they were perfectly washed, I couldn't see that being an issue. Did you have to iron his collar so he could keep it up to perfection?
No. That was just Eric, because that was just that particular shirt that had a collar on. So, I mean, a lot of the shirts didn't have a collar on. So
yeah,
well, that was just Eric. I mean, Eric was, and still is, he's a wonderful character.
I'm sure the salt in the socks was one of just many crazy requests that you would have got through the years. What else was right up there?
Well, I mean, Andy Cole was the worst one for his boots. He wanted his boots just so, and he'd come to you 2 minutes before they went out for a game and say, "Albert, just put them on a stretch for me." So you took it off him, and you know, you didn't have time for that. It wasn't going to do any good anyway. But yeah, I'd just put it down on the floor behind me or put it in my pocket. And then just as he was going out, he'd say, "Albert, have you done me that?" I'd say, "Yeah, I'm just checking it off now." And I'd go away, come back, I said, "Hey, well, that's better," he said. And all little things. Many, yeah. many little things.
What about Roy? Had he any crazy requests or superstitions?
No, Roy. To me personally, Roy was always one of my heroes, because Roy always give it 100%, and everybody knew what Roy was like. And, you know, he was the head leader, as you might say, with being the captain, and he led by example. And I wish we had a Roy today, I'll tell you.
You mentioned the shorts and socks that Cantona wanted to wear all the time. Jerseys. Did you have an issue as a kit man with players swapping jerseys, throwing jerseys into the crowd? Do you see a player going over and throwing a jersey in the crowd? That's a headache for me.
That was in its infancy then.
Right. Didn't happen too often.
It was tradition in Europe. That was what it was like in Europe all the time. When you played in the Champions League or whatever European competition you played in, that was the normal. They tried to keep a keep a lid on it when it was getting a little bit out of hand. And but it now, I mean, it's rife. I mean, they do it at half time now. And I mean, I used to say, so Alec Ferguson, you know, you'll have to tell him, boss, because my budget's going up, and you'll have to tell him. Yeah, all right. Anyway, Ken Merrick came to me one day and said, Albert, you know, this bill's going up, and you know, what's happening? I said, well, it's the shirts that are going, Ken, and whatever. Well, I'll start charging them, he says. I'll start charging them. Make a list. Of course, that didn't go down too well. Then it was have a word with the manager. So I had a word with the manager, and I said, don't forget, boss. I said, tell them before you go out. I said, they've not got to change the shirts. Right, okay, he says. Anyway, they all went out, and I was stood there, and he never said anything to them. And I sort of, I give him a look, enough to kill him. And he just smiled, and we went out and came in at half time. And he was just about to do his team talk, and I said, boss, I said, tell him about the shirts. Please tell him about the shirts. So he's giving his team talk at half time, and, you know, don't do this and do that and do the other. Oh, and by the way, one last thing. Albert says, don't change your shirt. Well, you can imagine what that was like. Every one of them came in after the game with no shirt on.
Just going to the practicalities of it then, in terms of your job, and maybe those last few years around 2011, 2012, 2013, you mentioned a budget for jerseys. I sort of just assume that a player wears a brand new jersey for every single game, and then if they just go home with it afterwards.
I should imagine that is the case now, but then it wasn't. That's another thing that's changed, because, like I say, to me now, it's just gone out of hand. I mean,
your head must have been wrecked, I'd imagine, for many years with, can you get me a jersey? Definitely. Everybody you knew, can you get me a jersey?
You mean off other people?
Off other people, whether it was friends or people you'd run into, when they'd hear what your job was.
Absolute crazy. I still get it now. The latest thing is, now I had it said to me this morning. Can you get me a Ronaldo shirt, Albert? Can you get me a Ronaldo shirt? Everybody wants a Ronaldo shirt. Can you get if I give you a photograph? Can you get Ronaldo to sign it? I'll hold my hands up. I've not even seen the boy. I love the boy to bits, but I haven't seen him yet because of the circumstances. I haven't seen him. I know when I will. We'll have a hug and a kiss. But I'm not going out of my way to go and see him, because that's what it's like.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's a little bit crazy, all right. You mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo, and he's back to so much fanfare now at Manchester United. You saw the younger Ronaldo and his impact in coming into that Manchester United dressing room. And in terms of his preparation, like, he's often been put up there as somebody who is absolutely meticulous, who's constantly obsessed with that 1%, whether it's around nutrition, whether it's about strength and conditioning. Was that something that was very apparent from when he joined the club?
When he first joined the club, from day one, he was telling everybody that he was going to be number one. And I mean, to me, people ask me this all the time. He wasn't our, still isn't our, in my opinion, he wasn't our greatest player. To me, Paul Scholes is our greatest player in the time that I've been there. But what I will say about Ronnie is the hardest working player I have ever seen in my life. He's got a natural talent, really has. But to get that extra, he has worked both. You know, practice makes perfect. His condition, his in the gym, and this and that and the other. You just cannot knock the boy, and good luck to him. He's a wonderful person. He really is a good boy.
Might talk about Alex Ferguson and his impact on your life and your relationship with him. You mentioned serving an apprenticeship there, a 2-3 year apprenticeship. Do you remember your first meeting with him?
Yeah. He on my first day, we used to have to take the kit from the laundry at Old Trafford over to the Cliff training ground. So we had a minibus, and we used to load the minibus up. And Norman said to me, "You drive the minibus over to the Cliff, and I'll follow you in my car." Okay, so we loaded the minibus up. Off we go to the Cliff, and we're going up the dock road in through Salford. And I go through, the traffic lights just changed as I'd gone over onto red. And Norman followed me, and off he went. He overtook me then and went to the Cliff. And he's at the Cliff before me, and he goes right in the manager's office, blah, blah, blah. And I pulls up at the Cliff, and I'm unloading the van with getting all the kit off and one thing and another. And one of the lads comes down and he said, "Albert, the manager wants you." So I says, "What's it?" What's it? He said, "I don't know, he wants you right away in his office." So I go in his office and he says, "Are you all right?" So I says, "Yes, boss." He said, "I've just had the police on to me about you." So I said, "You've had the police on to me about you? About me?" He says, "Yeah." He said, they've seen you going through a traffic light on the Salford Road," he said, in the minibus on red. He said, "You can't be doing that." And he said, "Anyway," he said, you've got to go to the police station with your license, and you could be getting banned." He said, "You can't be doing that in a Manchester." Anyway, I went over back to Old Trafford then, Woody's sick, to go and see Ken Merritt, who was the club secretary. But in the meantime, the boss had phoned Ken Merritt and told him that it was a big wind-up and all this type of thing. And that was on my first day. And that's how it was all the time.
did you ever have a falling out?
We had three rounds. No, not, I won't say I'm falling out. I mean, there was one particular... I was told from the start, tell him, if you're changing anything, tell him everything. So I started going down, when we went to London, instead of going on the train, I started going on the bus with the driver ahead of the train with all the kit. So we'd go in the morning, and then the boys would train in the morning and then get the train in the afternoon, and then I'd meet them at Euston at like 5 o'clock or half past when they got there. But in the meantime, I'd been either to Arsenal or to Chelsea or to Tottenham, wherever we were playing the next day, and did my preparation for the game. So I said, I'm going down on the coach. I said, instead of the train. So he says, yeah, what are you telling me that for? I said, I'm telling you, then you know where I am. Right, okay, he said, I'll see you later. So we got, and it'd be about 9 o'clock. So off we. Oh, sorry. And he said to me, "Do me a favour." He said, "Will you take this bag down to London?" So I says, "Yeah, no problem." So I gets hold of it, and I put it on his place where he sits, on his seat where he sat on the bus. So off we go. About 11:45, he rings me and he said, "Albert, where's that bag? Bring that bag up to my office." I said, "Boss," I said, "We're just going past Luton Airport." "What are you going past Luton Airport for?" I said, I told you this morning I'm going to London on the bus." Wanted to be some book or something. Whatever. So he slams the phone down. Well, I couldn't do anything. We just carried on. When we get to the station, gets off the bus, and I'm giving the lads a lift to put all their luggage underneath the coach, and they're all saying, "He's after you. He's going to kill you. He's after you. Here he is, boss. He's here. Here he is." And I'm keeping out of his way. I went on the coach the back way. He sits at the front. Then all the boys are like, Albert, give us a cup of tea. Boss, do you want a cup of tea? Albert, I'll get you a cup of tea. Oh, it was... And everybody was having a go. Anyway, we get to the hotel. I give everybody a lift to get the stuff off the coach. Have you got the boss's bag, Albert? Where's the boss wants his bag. Where's Albert? He wants the... Oh. And he went in, we still hadn't spoke. And then I went and had a bath. We all had a bath and a bit of a kip, I suppose. And then the boys used to go and have the meal separate to us in a private room. And then about 8 o'clock, we'd meet, go in the bar, have a drink, and then we'd go for our meal. And he was already in the bar when I got there. And as soon as I walked in, they all like, aye, aye. Yeah, Albert, come and sit next to the boss. Come and sit there. just a big, you know, everybody's having a go. And yeah. Still never spoke to me. So we come to go. We came to go in the room, and we're walking down the corridor, and he come down and he put his hand on my shoulder and said, give us a kiss.
Had you been genuinely worried up to that?
No. No, that was all part of it. That was all part of it.
Well, I heard one of his bags gave you an opportunity for revenge.
I've had a few of them. Yeah, definite. Yeah, I've had a few of them.
Was it he was heading off on holidays at one stage and he entrusted you with his bag wrongly?
Well, he had this. He had this brown bag. For all the bags that I give him, he had this one brown bag. And this one brown bag was as old as the hills. And I christened it the decorator's bag. And he said to me, Albert, will you go in the boot of my car? He said, my bag's in there. And he says, set me car home. Get the bag. He said, leave it in my office. So I said, yeah, okay. So I went in the back, got this bag, and I thought, right, bit of your own back here. So I went in the maintenance department and I got some old brushes, some old rollers, and a pair of overalls, and I wrapped everything up together and put it in the bag. Went in his office, left the bag there. So we won the game. We went top of the league. We went top of the league, and off he went. Off he went on his holidays. Oh, off he went as happy as Larry. And we went out for the night with the wives and the staff. Steve McLaren had organised a night out. So I told them while we were all having this meal in Alderley Edge about what I'd done to the bag. So they said he'll kill you.
I'd say it will.
He'll kill you. Anyway, when he, I came home and I was in bed here, and the phone went, and my wife picked the phone up, and I heard him say, "Is he there?" And I could hear Kathy laughing. That's his wife in the background. And he was in the south of, I think he was in the south of France somewhere. And I says, yes, boss. He said, you're sacked.
is that not a sackable offence? He's gotten his holidays. He doesn't even have any clothes. It's Alex Ferguson. Does he even have any of his own clothes in the bag?
You're sacked, he said. Then he just burst out laughing.
God, he let you away with a lot. He let you away with a lot.
Oh, we did bad, but, you know, It was tit for tat. He still does it now. So, you know,
yeah.
We're still at it together now, doing different things when we see one another. And yeah, it's just a wonderful relationship I've got with him.
It's great to see him back in good health again as well, and back at Old Trafford, and enjoying his football and being a big part of the club. It shows the closeness of your relationship as well, that you decided when Alex Ferguson was leaving Manchester United that you were also going to leave at the same time. By the sounds of it, you've stayed in touch and that closeness of the relationship has been maintained.
Yes. I mean, my wife wanted me to finish because she wanted a bit of, as she said, you know, a bit of time together and whatever. And I said to her, I said, look, I said, I promise you, I said, I'll retire, I said, when the boss retires. Because she always said that there was three people in our marriage. Her, me, and the boss. She always said that. So when he retired, I promised her that I would. So the morning that he told me that he was retiring and that he was going to announce it on the, you know, to the media, I rang my wife up and I said, put the TV on. I said, there's going to be an announcement. I said, in a few minutes. So she said, who are you signing? She always thought we were signing a player. So I said, no, I said, we're not signing a player. I said, the boss is going to announce that he's retiring. You know what her answer was? What time are you coming home?
Right. She wanted you back.
I said, bloody hell, Deb, give us a chance. Yeah. And because I didn't want to work for anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Because he was just so special.
I'd imagine every sports person in the world, every sports psychologist in the world would probably love to pick your brain about what you've seen and heard of Ferguson, the access that you had both.
He was the best, when you're talking, use that word psychologist, he's the, and I've heard a few, he's the best psychologist of, he's the best psychologist ever.
In what way?
Just the things that he did, the way that he spoke to people, the way that he treated people. He knew who he could give, putting it bluntly, a b**k into, and he knew who he couldn't give a b**k into. You know, he used to give me b**kings in front of the players, but I got used to it, and I knew it was done for a purpose, to sort of like get the players to think, well, bloody hell, he's having a go at Albert here, blah, blah, blah. And then he'd probably ring me up at the night and say, I was sorry about this afternoon. You know what I was doing. And or he'd see me the next day and say, I'm sorry about that. He said that. And it was all done for a purpose. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, just the most remarkable man. Like, you hear Roy Keane talk about him even still, and we'll talk about Ferguson's ability to say the right thing at the right time in the dressing room.
Oh, yeah.
Not every game was the biggest game, so therefore he didn't build it up to be. That actually sometimes it was, we're just better than them, go and do it. But if he felt something was off,
I can always remember, one of the best memories that I've got was when we played Tottenham at White Hart Lane. And in the first half, we were playing reasonably well, you know, but we ended up being 3-0 down at half time, and you're going in like 10 minutes before the end of the first half, like I used to do, to, you know, put the shirts out and do your little jobs, and you know, you poured the tea, and I poured the tea, and I'm thinking to myself, bloody hell, this is going to be a cracker. This at half time, he's going to kick a few backsides here, and you know, he's going to go ballistic or whatever. And I put his tea where he stands and whatever. And, you know, I sat in the corner with my cup of tea, and the boys came in, and you could hear a pin drop because they all had the same thing on the mind. This is going to be good. And he came in and he went to his cup of tea and he picked his tea up and he's looking round, and you could see the boys thinking to themselves, well, come on, let us have it. Come on, let us have it. You know, What's going to happen here now? And he just said, what's the matter with you? Come on. He said, shake yourself. What? Come on. He said, get an early goal now. He said, and we'll have, he said, we'll have these. He said, I'm telling you, get an early goal. And he sort of like, I think he went and went to the toilet, or, you know, he went in the back, and everybody's thinking, what was all that about? You know? Anyway, everybody's putting the shirts on and wiping themselves down and this and that. And then he goes and stands at the door and the bell goes. And then he says, come on, boys, now do what I've told you. He says, early goal and we'll do these. Anyway, we went out second half. 29 seconds, Andy Cole scores a goal. He goes back in the dugout. He said, well, that's good. He said, we'll win this now. And we won 5-3.
Yeah, Teddy Sheringham was on the show recently and he was playing for Tottenham that day and said he remembers walking out of the Spurs dressing room and seeing the look on Ferguson's face. And even though they were 3-0 up, he knew they were in trouble. That the look in Ferguson's face said it all. Have you seen him lately?
Who, the boss?
Yeah.
I spoke to him 3 times today. I haven't seen him.
Wow.
For about three days, but I spoke to him three times today. I speak to him every day.
Right. So, and is that just checking in how each other are and keeping in touch?
Yeah, he's always been good to me. But you know, since my wife passed away, he's been fantastic with me. Really, as he's a wonderful man and a very, very, very good loyal friend.
Yeah, that side of him, I think, has probably become more public since he left. Obviously, as manager, there's a certain hardness that you have to exude. But so many stories have emerged since he left the job of times where he would just randomly appear at a hospital or at a hospice to meet somebody who was a fan that he would have heard of, that he would have got a letter about, that very incredibly generous with his time.
Fantastic. I mean, you know, people would write in with a problem, or, you know, he'd ring me and he'd say, Albert, bring us a shirt up while I send it to X. Don't have to be anything special. Just somebody wants to get buried in a shirt, or all that type of stuff. Fantastic. Give his time. Have charity events. Support local charities. Everything. Just different class of a fella.
There must have been times, and I think you mentioned it, the odd time over 20 years where things did go wrong, where, I don't know, something was forgotten about or something was misplaced. It seems you had a particular issue with goalkeepers. There was was it Mark Bosnich who ended up wearing a massively oversized goalkeeper's jersey at one stage?
Who's feeding you this information, Steve? Somebody is.
Nothing to do with you, was it?
Well, hold your hands up.
Yeah.
Like I did at the time.
What happened? Hold your hands up.
Well, it was the first game of operating out of Callington when we first went to Callington, because we'd just come back from Brazil, and it was the first game back on the, I think it was the Wednesday night. We came back at the weekend. We played Arsenal, and you know, the boys got ready for the game and they were going out, and the first thing I heard about it was Tony Colton shouts up, Where's Albert? Yes, CC. Bozzy's shirt. So I says, He's got it on. Bozzy's shirt. Next minute, Arsenal come out of the dressing room, and they, right away, I saw what he was going on about. Arsenal come out and they've got their yellow kit on. Bosnich has got a yellow goalkeeper's top on. Well, yeah.
Fatal error.
Big error. Yeah.
So what did you do? Error.
Panic. And then I started running around like a supposed headless chicken. I goes to go up the stairs near the dressing room, and the big burly security guard shouts, Albert, you can't come up here. Posh is coming down. So I said, oh, is she? And I shot up the stairs and nearly knocked her over as she was coming through the door. And off I went, running around trying to get a shirt. And then somehow, I think it was Alec Wiley, got an old shirt or something from somewhere. And while I was running around in a panic, and he had this, it was like a dishcloth out of the kitchen or something like that. Of course, by the time I'd gone in the old laundry and found a black shirt of another colour, I'm still panicking, and a ghost comes running down the tunnel, and the game's going on, and we was defending. Bozzy was in the goal at the Stretford end, and I run while the game was going on, run up to him with this other shirt, and all the Stretford end started singing, "You don't know what you're doing. You don't know what." So there's still one or two people have a laugh over that. Hold your hands up.
Well, that's it. The one I couldn't believe, and I couldn't find too much detail on it, was that you had lost Peter Schmeichel's goalkeeping gloves before a match.
No, I had them stolen.
Right.
I had them stolen.
So what game was this before?
That was before the Champions League final in 1999.
So the day of the match?
No, the day before for training.
Right. And he just gave me the gloves to mind.
Peter was the most particular, what's the word? The most particular person with his kit of all the players that I had. He had to have in a certain place, a certain amount. If Peter wanted six shirts, you give Peter, six towels, you give Peter six towels. He had three pair of boots. He had boots for the warm-up, gloves for the warm-up, gloves for this, gloves for that. All had to be just so. And he gave me the gloves to wear for training, that he wore for training as he was going out. He said, hold on to them. And I did it every time. And they went doing the circuits round the pitch to warm up. And somebody shouted me for something, and I put the gloves down on top of my bag that I always took out with me. And I put them down, went off doing something else, and then Peter gave me the old signal to run on with the gloves for him. And I looked down, and the gloves had gone off the top of the bag. Oh, and I knew what it meant to him. That was disaster. Anyway,
how does that conversation go with Peter Schmeichel?
Well, there was a bit of effing and jeffing. And anyway, I tried to give him a pair of Raymond van der Gaal's gloves, and he told me where to stick them. You know, in certain fact, and he was just going, steam was coming out of his ears. He was just going ballistic. And anyway, the Barcelona kit man at the time, who is he's still a good friend of mine. He heard all the rumpus going on, and he went and got another pair of gloves out of his storeroom, and I had to beg Peter to put these gloves on, but then. You know, I had his, what we call his match gloves, in the hotel, and so thankfully it
could have been all worse. Right for that.
Oh, could have been worse, but yeah.
And hey, it all worked out in the end that night in Barcelona.
All works out wonderful in the end.
Albert, we've been giving away some Cadbury Ireland hampers to some listeners and viewers who have been sending in their questions. I'm going to give you one from Stephen Malone, who asked, was there any game that you really look forward to or really hated?
I always look forward to the Manchester derbies. Always. Still do. They're, they are the main games for me. That, you know, we've been a Mancunian all my life and getting some stick off all the City fans, and you know, but you know, that's I was always it was always a good, well, I used to wind myself up, you know, with the tension of it all, and it was always wonderful to beat City. Still is, yeah. always.
I guess you always just had to take it as well in that role.
You couldn't
say anything back.
Oh no, well you could. Sometimes, because they've not always been. You know, they've not always been where they are today. I mean, I can remember the time when they couldn't even pay the wages. So, you know, there's a bit of a, you know, I've got a lot of history. I can remember. I'm like the old elephant. I can remember them in the struggles. Don't worry about that. And I'm a bitter red. I'll hold my hands up.
That's fair enough. And one last one from Owen Collins, which we sort of touched on already, but he's asking particularly around Cristiano Ronaldo and how fussy he was in the dressing room. Like, you talk about Peter Schmeichel wanting 6 towels. Was Ronaldo on that level?
No, Ronnie was easy. You know, Ronnie's Ronnie. He's simple. No, not a problem with him. Oh, he's easy.
Albert, it's been a real privilege to talk to you and to hear the stories from such a brilliant era for Manchester United. And clearly you're still a big fan of the club and what they're doing at the moment under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. This has been part of our series with thanks to Cadbury FC, global partner of Manchester United. You can check out cadburyfc.com for updates on promotions and giveaways. Get onto all our social channels and you will get access to all our interviews throughout the series. Albert Morgan, thank you very much.
Football on Off the Ball.